Okay, well, this is the hour that we call Conversations with Linda. You call, she converses. Actually, many great stories have come out of these calls as well. So we'll be back with Linda in just a moment and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Linda, you're going to be in Los Angeles in a few weeks at the Conscious Life Expo.
Yeah, what is it? It's only a couple of weeks.
Yep, it's coming up really fast.
It's Valentine's weekend.
Yes, it is.
And there is another conference that I'll be attending in. It's the Ozark UFO Conference in Eureka Springs, and it is April 9th through 11th. And I would like everybody to know, if they heard that there might not be a 2010 Eureka Springs Conference, everybody got the equipment and the people that they needed, and it'll be the 22nd Ozark UFO Conference. It's always been everybody's kind of their favorite in some respects because it's such a beautiful place. It's a historical Victorian town, and this is a conference that Lou Farish started back in 1989, or about that period of time, and it has coalesced around one conference center so that everybody stays in the same place, and the conference is in the same place, and it really works out well. And this year, Nick Pope is coming over from England.
Good guy.
Yeah, he really is. And he's going to talk about this 2009 flap in the UK and his own insights from having worked in the UFO Project office about this sudden closing of the project, UFO Project, as of December 1st, leaving the public and the media, really, with no place now officially to go. And Nick has some very fascinating insights. And I have more to report on RAF Bentwaters, and John Burroughs will be joining me for the day when we do a presentation together at Eureka Springs. So, and then I'll also be doing RAF Bentwaters, not with John, but a much more deep and in very interesting hypnosis session at the LAX Hilton, which is that February 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton. It's the 2010 consciousness, I think they call it consciousness UFO or consciousness conference or something.
I've got a note for you for your next stories if you can check into this. Got a phone call last night from one of our listeners during an open line portion, and she was talking about a spider, a Brazilian wandering spider, it's called, that's been getting into the country. They say specifically up in Seattle, through with bananas and things out of Honduras, for example. And it's apparently a very deadly spider. The Richard de Grantham is a director of insect diagnostics at Oklahoma State University. Check into him, Linda.
All right.
This is apparently a very serious little insect, and or whatever the thing is.
Yeah, the whole issue, both in bilgewater, you know, and ships with things coming in and getting into our water, the banana trade bringing in these bizarre insects. And I know in Florida, they now, the pet trade that they have got, what appears to be two boas there that could be, they're so afraid that they will mate and produce a giant form of boa constrictor in Florida.
Is an arachnid an insect, or is it all by itself?
The arachnid is its own
species, group, yeah.
Yeah, of earth life.
Okay. All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Point Arena, California. Our first-time caller is Nate. Hey, Nate, take it away.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, Nate.
Great, great. Well, I myself have never seen a UFO or experienced an abduction that I know about. So I'm sort of a skeptic on the whole thing, but I do have one incident that I just cannot explain.
All right, take it away.
Well, at the last house I was living at, just at the next town south of Point Arena here, I was sleeping with all my windows and doors locked. But in the middle of the night, I woke up with this pressure on, I was sleeping on the floor because I didn't have a bed, and there was this pressure, almost like a person had was leaning on my back and pressing me to the floor. And I could clearly feel a hand on my shoulder and a hand on my waist. But when I raised my head to look around, I can kind of see this outline of a face, like someone with long black hair. and I just turned my head and went back to sleep. And I woke up in the morning, and everything was still locked and in check. And I just could not explain that one incident. And my dog was sleeping in the car at the time, and the only other animal I had with me was a cat, and it was only 4 pounds.
I have heard so many experiences similar to this. And there have been people who have been waked and could not move, what they call night paralysis, with what they felt like was somebody sitting on their chest or their back, exactly as you were describing. And one of the most amazing was a woman who felt at first that she was paralyzed and could not move, and she was on her stomach, and she felt as if the bed shook. And when she broke her paralysis somehow, and she flipped around, and saw an imprint going down in the process, as if there was something she could not see that was either sitting or pushing on the bed, and she watched the bed go down and then come back up. And she said not being able to see what was creating that was much more terrifying, she thought, than whatever it was. But now we move into this whole issue of frequencies. We're dealing with, I personally am convinced, and I've had people who have worked in military and intelligence reinforce this, we are dealing with, well, I'm just going to call it a non-human intelligence, because that could include time travelers, other dimensionals, other solar systems, so we'll just call it non-human life, that have intelligence and have technologies in which they can operate on our planet among us in frequencies that our retinas cannot see. And once you have absorbed that, once you realize that is part of the phenomena, and our governments know that, and that they use infrared equipment to search for many things, including the mysterious lights in the crop formations in England, then what this gentleman has just described, and the woman who watched a part of her bed go down and come up and knew something was there and she could not see it, rather than being afraid of it, I personally think you turn it around and you say, I am so curious about what is this phenomena that keeps interacting with our planet, sometimes doing things like animal mutilations, leaving the bodies, but never allowing us to watch the process, or interacting perhaps even in rooms without our being aware. I don't look at this as scary. I look at this as fascinating. And why is it necessary for them to remain so hidden from our human lives? And yet, as Gary said in Scotland, they need us.
So, have you been looking into the possibility that we may not go back to the moon? I'm in a discussion with Richard C. Hoagland about that now, Linda, and we'll know Monday or Tuesday what the budget submission might be, but they may take that out.
George, remember, the United States is one in a long line now of their... the United States is not the 800-pound gorilla in the space.
Not anymore.
No. Japan will be there.
India will be there.
And India and China. There are countries that are lined up and want to go to that Shackleton crater in the southern pole of the moon, because there are places there where they're, in terms of solar energy and powering with solar energy, that there is sunlight 96% of every year. And whoever gets there and builds their buildings and goes underground and has solar interaction with all of that sunshine in the South Pole, they are going to have, you might say, kind of endless energy, depending upon what kind of equipment they want to plug into it. But we are not the ones driving now this, we'll call it this street that is beginning to develop to go to the moon. And these other nations are going to be there. Now the question is, will NASA and the European Space Agency start pooling their monies together, and that we're going to move forward with a joint Europe and U.S., making the money issues a little easier for both, and that ESA and NASA may end up doing almost everything together in this century.
I think space eventually will be joint, just like a Star Trek, don't you?
Well, I know that in terms of the United States space program, at least for the next decade or so, given the financial problems of the country, NASA needs so much more money than it has, and it does miracles with what it does get. And if it could combine with the European Space Agency, both in their launch facilities, which include the launch facility in Europe and in other places of the world, then our scientists and our brilliant minds would be able to be applied to all kinds of challenges that we have. And if we can get you've just raised the question, mm-hmm. would it be an American base and a European base and a Japanese base and an Indian base and a China base, or would the moon become the first truly international base for the Earth?
Next up, we go to Dewey in Osceola, Iowa, on Coast to Coast. Hey, go ahead, Dewey.
How are you folks doing tonight?
Good.
Well, I was listening to the gentleman talking about, they told him when he asked why they were doing this, and he said sanctuary.
Right.
One thing popped into my mind. Has anybody ever thought about that maybe they're creating hybrids so that they can inhabit the bodies?
Well,
sanctuary kind of means you're looking for a place to hide.
Sanctuary, in terms of Webster, is almost always associated with something that is considered sacred. And when you go, let's just say, for example, if you take the James Penniston hypnosis session in the R.A.F. Bentwaters, and if we are dealing with something, time travelers, other dimensional beings from another solar system, and they have a survival problem, and we can't fill in all the puzzle, but there is something about life on this Earth that they look at as being a Band-Aid, that it can help them survive, then the word sanctuary that came from the being's mind into the human mind, that word sanctuary, it may have been trying to communicate that the Earth, they are using the Earth like a sanctuary, something in which life here is so precious, they are trying to preserve it. If there is any possibility that that is the meaning behind that telepathic communication of sanctuary, it would mean that the entities prize the Earth, prize all the biodiversity of life on Earth, even if they are using some of that life genetically, and that the last thing that they would ever want to do would be to violate or do violence to the sanctuary of Earth. I think that's how I am personally looking at that word. There might be another meaning, but I think that we are in a big story that has to do with genetic harvest, because there is a problem. And whatever that problem is, we seem to be necessary to fixing that problem. And as long as the Earth and humans are a genetic treasure, I don't see what we have to be afraid of about these intelligences. And I think it's a frustration to me, to Malcolm Robinson, to Nick Pope, and a lot of others, that the governments should come clean. They should tell us the truth. And if the Earth is providing some kind of genetic material to help other beings survive, does not appear to be any wholesale intent to hurt us or to hurt the Earth. So why can't we know the whole story?
Does the alien harvest continue, Linda, do you think?
The human abduction syndrome definitely continues, yes. And animal mutilations have never stopped in the nation of Argentina since 2002, when they really took on a spike. And I find that personally so fascinating. Is there something about the geopolitical conditions of our planet? Is there something about what our particular government and perhaps the UK and European governments do in trying to block, let's say, point-to-point transportation by these advanced intelligences, and that we have learned something trying to block them, but that there are other whole sections of our planet, both in the northern and the southern hemisphere, in which there are no technologies to block? And would that explain why, from 2002 to 2010 now, that the nation of Argentina, it's had everything. Human abductions, animal mutilations, beams of light that people have described coming down from objects in the sky, have seen what they thought were people rising in these beams. There have been other reports that animals have risen in these beams. All of this has been going on in Argentina. And in fact, I think it was by the end of 2003, there was a headline in one of the Buenos Aires newspapers. And it was that SENASA, which is Argentina's version of our Department of Agriculture, had officially acknowledged that there had been about 3,000 in some reports from farmers, and there were veterinarians who were writing up reports and sending them to SENASA saying that they had looked at tissue under microscopes and the tissue had been subjected to something that caused high heat and cautery. Now, what is that instrument? What is that technology? And most people say, well, lasers. Here's the problem. When John Altshuler, the hematologist and pathologist, was alive in Denver, and I worked with him on so many cases and went out in the field and I gathered so much tissue and grass and soil, and he had me look under the microscope at the mutilated tissue and then a slide that had been prepared by a gynecologist in Denver who was using lasers in surgery. And he said, Linda, just tell me what you see. And in the gynecology surgery, it looked like black pepper around the surgery excision. That's the carbon. There's a carbon residue when you use a laser because we're all carbon life forms. In the mutilated animal excision that we looked at, dozens and dozens, there was never any carbon residue. That means that the instrument could not have been a laser.
Good point. Linda, earthfiles.com, you always update that website, don't you?
All the time. It's news, and it never stops.
24/7. Do you ever get any sleep?
Oh, yes. I have a great life, and I have a lot of fun. But I've gotten to a point where I dance with my computer like I do outdoors with life and playing. I come in and do a story, and then I go out and have some fun.
Let's come back and have some final phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM. Art Bell filling in for me on our next Coast to Coast program with his special guest, physicist Michio Kaku. Make sure you're part of that program. And when we come back, final phone calls with Conversations with Linda on Coast to Coast AM. Linda, your name came up this week, too, associated with the old Sightings television show. Did you have fun doing that?
Yeah. I created it, and I was supervising producer for the pilot, and it was really quite a challenge. And there were people in the studios who were very resistant to wanting to go as deep as I wanted to go into some of the subjects, such as the human abduction syndrome and animal mutilations and crop circles and so forth. And it turned out that it got the highest rating for a 9 o'clock broadcast on Fox when it first aired in October of 1991. And that hour was kind of a breakthrough on some of those subjects, mm-hmm. and reinforced for me that when you do try to do subjects more deeply and more like news, I think that the audience is there for it.
Absolutely. You know, you make it interesting, make it move, you know, make it visual, and it'll work.
Well, I think that people are hungry for things that are not made up and not Hollywoodized. I think that doing things as news is what people would really like to see when it comes to Earth mysteries.
I think so, too. You know, we had ABC's Nightline crew here last night doing a segment on the program that they're going to air in a few weeks. And that's what we were talking about, how people are changing and changing incredibly fast,
right,
away from some of this drama into reality.
Yeah.
They like that. Let's go to Lima, Ohio. Mike, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Mike.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
This is Mike that sent you the DVD with the UFOs on it that I found. Last 2008 in November 22nd, I retired from the power company, and my life's been kind of a nightmare since then. My wife was seriously ill. It's been a month and a half in the hospital, and then a month and a half in the nursing home, and I don't get to spend much time outside anymore. But last March was my last sighting, and I helped my wife into the bathroom at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I stepped out, on the back steps like I do every time I take her in there so I can look at the sky. And I stepped out there, and I'm in my pajamas and my bare feet in March, and it's really cold. And I look up, and I seen this little dot coming. I thought, that's a satellite, and I'm standing there watching it. And then the thought hits me, well, satellites usually travel from west to east, and this thing's coming at me from south to north. And I'm watching it and watching it, and it gets almost straight up overhead, and it just stops. And I keep my binoculars inside the back door, so I grabbed them and I focused in on this thing, and it just looked like a child's sparkler up there in the shape of a donut, and just sparks flying everywhere. And I've never heard anybody describe anything like that before. And
I have seen that, sir, myself in Gulf Breeze, Florida. Must have been around 1990, and there were four of us on the beach during a night. We were playing in the ocean. It was a conference, but we were just playing, and all of a sudden, all four of us saw it exactly the same time in this dark moonlit. There was no moon. It was a moonless sky, and it looked like a sparkler. It was bright banana yellow, and it was long, oval. And it came across the sky, putting off all of the yellow sparklers. And then, just as it seemed to pop in, after a few seconds, it just kind of faded or popped back out. And all four of us were astonished, because we know that we did not see anything that is conventional. And you're describing that sparkler effect is, to me, one of those signs when you hear people describing something they've seen in the sky.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks for the call, Mike. Appreciate it. We go to Queens now in New York. Pauline, it's your turn. Hi, Pauline.
Hi. We're looking forward to meeting the both of you at the Conscious Life Expo.
Oh, great. Come up and definitely introduce yourself.
I'm going to be volunteering. Hopefully, I'll make enough so I could actually get into all your classes.
Okay.
I had a question, a few of them. I don't know, but I told them only one, so I'll at least do the one that I said I was going to do. If I can have more, I'll get your permission first. You guys were saying that we're not going back to the moon. Do you remember Al Bielek once said that we can travel to the moon, but he did it through time travel?
Remember him from the Philadelphia experiment?
Yes, I remember reading it through your website. I mean, through your the past archives.
Yes.
So I mean, maybe that's why they're not going back. They don't need to.
It's money. It's all money.
Yeah.
NASA has been struggling with increasing straitjackets on increasing cuts. And that's why the question has been hanging out there, should the United States try to go back there and do a moon base? But the whole issue now is, what role is the United States going to play on a planet where China and Japan and India and other nations are aggressively going out into space, and they are going to have bases on the moon no matter what we do?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Have you ever had any China sightings, by the way? Have you ever been told about that? Because I'm Chinese. I was just curious.
Oh, I'm sure there's been many, Linda.
Yes. Oh, yes.
China
has a gigantic body and a long history of all kinds of what would be considered UFO phenomena and interactions on the ground with beings and lights and stories about people encountering something that looks like a light coming down a path, and then out of the light comes a being. And in other cases, people have seen a being that turned into a light, making you wonder what are these spheres of light that interact with crop formations in people's houses, come through their cars? It's almost as if they are some kind of a monitoring device that can also somehow turn into a, I'm going to just say, some sort of an exit or entrance door into our planet.
Would you subscribe, Linda, to the David Jacobs theory that what's happening is not for good intent at all, as opposed to some others who just think this is a very interesting phenomenon, abductions, and we have nothing to worry about?
Agenda has always been the question. We're dealing not with one type, we're dealing with multiple types. Some people in military and government have suggested to me that everything may not be cool between the different groups. And if there is, I'm going to use the word hostility, but not, it's not war as we think of war with guns and violence, but more manipulative and mind control wars with an agenda that is incomprehensible. So from that point of view, there may not be any intent that's negative, evil, or any of those kinds of words, but it might be self-serving. And depending upon what this self-serving agenda is to time travelers, other dimensional beings, beings from another galaxy, another solar system, wherever they come from, whatever their self-serving agenda is, they might get along just fine with us the way they do, which is basically not to interface with us much at all and to use the Earth however they're using it. If the game changed and the goal began to be cohabitation, then you would have in front of us these beings. And maybe part of the reluctance of whatever the intelligences are has been that they know that humans are afraid of anything that doesn't look human. We are pretty xenophobic creatures. And so maybe part of this whole disconnect between the fact that the phenomena is there and interacts with the planet, it interacts with humans and animals and plants and water and soil all the time, but it doesn't make itself so visible to us except in these remarkable moments of somebody sees a craft or the sparkly, the strange sparkly lights, or the creatures in the bedroom at night or in the, around the barn at noon. All of these strange, we'll call them insertions of something that's other than human into human lives. And I think that part of the paralysis and the missing time seems to be the way we would put a cat to sleep in order to deal with a cat in a vet's office in many ways, because so much of the abduction syndrome seems to be by some kind of a very advanced mind that is interacting with us and knows that we become completely terrified and fight. There's all kinds of cases, right, including Travis Walton, who tried to pick up one of their instruments and throw at one of those beings. Humans are not trusting of something that they don't know and understand. So maybe the paralysis, the unconsciousness, the missing time is a way of interacting with us without causing so much trauma. And if that's the case, then they are trying to do us a favor while they go about the business of using genetic material on this planet to whatever needs they have.
George is in Jacksonville, Florida, east of the Rockies. George, go ahead. Good morning.
Great. Hey, guys.
Hi.
I'm really glad to be on, finally. Hi, Linda. Hi, George.
Hello.
Well, I had a couple things that I wanted to ask. First of all, I've started having out-of-body experiences since I was about 10, okay? I started slipping out of my body, and it was fine. It wasn't scary. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mostly in sleep or before going to sleep at night?
Right in the middle of it. Right when I started to fall asleep, I would fall out of my body. Okay. And it felt like I was tethered to my body at one point, which was fine. It wasn't scary. I figured out how to do it, and it didn't scare me at all. And then probably about 2 years after that, I started having extreme night terrors, and I would be paralyzed in my sleep. give me 1 second. I'm sorry. So this started happening over a period of time where it would come in clusters, where I would have sleep paralysis every single night for a month. It hasn't happened for about 4 months now.
Now, that could be a medical affliction, right, Linda?
Well, I was going to ask you if you noticed any change in temperature.
Not really.
Sometimes people report that in this what's called repetitive night paralysis, sometimes they will feel a really cold chill in the air. And I just wondered if you've ever experienced that.
No, I've had experiences where sometimes it's not terrifying, but sometimes it's extremely terrifying, and I feel like there's definitely something in the room with me.
You've never sensed the presence of the old hag syndrome, which is the other side of sleep paralysis?
Absolutely, where it feels like something's sitting on your chest.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I felt that before, but sometimes it's different. Sometimes it doesn't feel like there's something in the room with me, something trying to terrorize me. It almost feels like something's feeding off of my fear in a way.
Linda, have you ever investigated this syndrome, this bizarre syndrome called the old hag syndrome, and what the heck it is?
Not as that, but it has come up in the abduction syndrome from long, long ago, where people have said that they have waked up with the sense that the weight on their chest is something there and they cannot see it.
Yeah.
We're back into this issue that if we are dealing with creatures, entities, whatever you want to call them, humanoids, who can make themselves invisible to us, it's not ghosts. It's not something that is supernatural or mythological. It's technology. And that if you can deflect photons, right? If you can deflect photons, right now, George, from you, no one in the studio could see you. Because the way we see everything around us is a straight line of photons that come into the retina. If there is a technology that can somehow deflect photons from whatever it is, the deflection of those photons off just a little bit means something could be standing 6 feet from you and you could not see it. Doesn't mean it's a ghost. It means it's there, but it has learned how, with a technology, to deflect photons. Therefore, you could have entities and craft and all kinds of things working and interacting with this planet, and they would only be seen when they choose to be seen. That is a startling kind of revelation sometimes for people, and I think that when Jim Sparks was on Coast with me a couple of years ago, and he was stressing that he became convinced that he was dealing with intelligences that could be in another galaxy and actually be able to project in some kind of molecular percentage from whatever they are and whatever they do, and that they could interact here. And he said that, "I know that some of these cases of ghost hunters where they see something that looks translucent," he said, "I think that's the technology of part of this phenomena we're dealing with. And depending upon how much translucence or complete deflection of photons, we are beginning to wake up to the fact that we can have another intelligence here. It's not mythological. It is not supernatural. It is its own real life form.
Yeah, living and breathing by itself.
Yeah, that has technology that can make itself invisible. And in fact, it's been suggested to me that our cloaking devices and our advanced technologies are back engineered from technologies that came to this earth on somebody else's craft.
Next up, let's go to Dave in Houston, Texas, if we have time. Dave, I've got about a minute left, so I'll let you just jump right in.
Okay, I just heard that you guys have been talking about abductions and such. I just wanted to say that I think Linda's on to things about there being more than one group that comes here, and there's different technologies they have. They can come down here with little microprobes. We're just now getting into nanotechnologies. They're far advanced over that.
Absolutely. They're probably way advanced with us, Linda. Linda, we're running out of time here, but he's right, and you're right. I think we're being visited by many different breeds or species.
And that they interact with technologies that, to our human minds, are incomprehensible. That doesn't mean that those technologies are not real, that they are capable of making things invisible, and that these mysterious lights in crop circles, the plasma lights up in Hestalen, plasma lights that have been seen around the world for centuries, are probably a technology that is used to monitor and communicate back to something somewhere else and interact with our planet. And I don't find any of that frightening.
Not at all. Thanks, Linda. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere up there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.